Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We begin today's program with a conversation about love and loss, about dying, but most of all, it's about living. Betty Farrell is considered a visionary in the field of palliative care. If you don't know what that is, it might not be what you think. The SDSU College of Nursing recently brought Farrell to the state for a conversation about spirituality and ethics at the end of life. Betty Farrell has been in nursing for more than 37 years. Her entire career has been focused on quality of life, pain management, and the nascent field of palliative care. We caught up with her at the LA City of Hope National Medical Center and asked her about the critical distinction between end-of-life care, hospice, and palliative care.
The hospice movement started in this country in the 1970s and has been a very, very important advance in health care. But the focus of hospice has always been on the last months of life, and really, for many people, the last weeks of life. The palliative care movement has really begun over just about the last 15 years, and the focus of palliative care was really to upstream the good ideas that were a part of hospice. And so the idea is that people facing serious illness from the very first time of their initial diagnosis really could benefit from the same principles of good management of symptoms, support of their family, all of the elements that we learned about through hospice we've also realized really should be applied much easier in the course of care.
So 15 years is not a lot of time for a movement to kind of get ground. How did it get started? Who were those first innovators? And where has it been in the last 15 years?
It's a really remarkable, as you know, someone has been in this area of my entire career, to see in many ways how quickly this notion of palliative care has advanced. And so where we currently stand from really 15 years ago, having no programs in the country in palliative care, now over 90% of all hospitals in the United States with 300 beds or more have a formal palliative care program. So that's pretty remarkable to go from, you know, 0 to 90%. Palliative care is really a good idea, and it makes sense for a lot of reasons. It's good in terms of outcomes for patients and families. There's now strong research, strong evidence that shows that people who get palliative care get better pain management, better symptom management. Palliative care promotes better communication between the clinicians, such as the physicians or nurse practitioners, with patients and families. There's also greater benefit for the healthcare system. So palliative care is also less expensive in many instances.
Let's go back to that communication factor, how that helps with communication between providers.
One of the key hallmarks of palliative care is focused on communication, meaning that the palliative care team meets with the patient and the family to help them understand the medical information that they've been given, and then to make decision about how that applies to their particular instance. So, for example, the cardiologist or the heart doctor may have come in and told this patient and family, you know, unfortunately, your heart disease has gotten much worse and you're now having heart failure. Mm-hmm. And this is not something, we're going to treat your symptoms, we're going to do the best we can, but this is not something that we can cure. And in fact, it's going to get worse. And therefore, we have this special care called palliative care that we want to refer you to or to have come see you, because this can really help you with your disease in stage heart failure. And then the palliative care team, the goal of the palliative care team would be to come in and meet with the family, and hopefully the cardiologist could also be present for this conversation or, you know, participate as well. But the idea would be then to have a time where the patient and family can really understand, what does this mean? What does heart failure mean? What can I expect? How quickly will this progress? What symptoms will I have? But the palliative care team will also then work with the patient to understand you as an individual. So, Mr. Smith, you know, we're sorry that you have heart failure, and as we've just explained, it is going to get worse. But let's talk about what's important to you. So, you know, is it important that you can continue to help care for your grandchildren? Is it, Mr. Smith, that you have a business and so you really need a little time to hand your business over to someone else? Or is it important to you that you make one more trip, you know, across the state to visit your elderly mother who's in a nursing home? So what's important to you? And then the palliative care team can help plan your care so that you can make decisions about what you're going to do, what's important, what unfinished business you might have to tend to, and just to prepare you and your family for what lies ahead in terms of this progressive disease.
So who is on this team? Are these medical providers? Are they social workers?
So again, one of the characteristics of palliative care is that it is interdisciplinary care. The four key disciplines that are a part of palliative care programs are physicians. So there are now physicians that are specialty trained and board certified in this field of palliative care, just like your doctor may be a specialist in obstetrics or oncology or critical care medicine. There are now physicians who are trained and certified in palliative medicine. There are also nurses, and again, the nurses are specialty trained and certified in the specialty of palliative care. Social workers, and again, the social workers that work on palliative care teams are trained in things like communication and family counseling, bereavement support or grief support for you and your family, and chaplaincy, because spiritual needs often are very important to people as they face the end of life. And then the palliative care team can determine if other disciplines are needed. For example, if many of our patients have children or grandchildren that are very young and they may be really struggling with understanding, you know, why is my grandfather so sick or what's happening with my mother? And so in that instance, the palliative care team may also bring in child life specialists or perhaps physical therapy or nutrition support. So the palliative care team will also bring in other disciplines as needed based on your individual needs.
What misperceptions do you have to overcome from the patient standpoint to get them access to the resources that you think will be helpful for them?
The greatest misconception, and it happens every day in truly the majority of cases, is that when someone mentions to a patient or family, we'd like you to see palliative care, the first knee-jerk response is always, no, not yet. Oh, no, not for us. Because there still is this tendency to equate palliative care with end-of-life care. And people want to avoid the end-of-life. But I can also tell you that probably 90% of the time when a patient or family finally agree and they're seen by palliative care consistently, the first thing they say is, why didn't we do this sooner?
You also mentioned that the end of life should not be seen as a medical failure. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Sure. I think in our society, and particularly over the last 50 years, you know, our grandparents and great-grandparents lived at a period of time where if you got pneumonia, you died. If you, if you had a heart attack or heart problems, you died. And so, death was a more natural part of our lives. But what has happened now over the last 50 years is that that technology has changed. We have antibiotics, we have chemotherapy, we have intensive care units. And so culturally, our society has gotten to the point where we think that death can be avoided. Hmm. We think death is optional. So when you find yourself in a hospital, in an intensive care unit, and you've just been told, you know, you have this terminal illness or your condition is not going to improve, the knee-jerk response again is, surely not. You can fix this, mm-hmm. right? Everything can be fixed. I mean, that's why I come to this big hospital. That's why we've traveled across the state to get to this major medical center, is surely you have a pill or a machine or a specialist or someone who can change this. And therefore, the end of life is seen as failure. You know, everything went wrong. A very important part of both hospice and palliative care is to be a message that, of course, you know, the people that we love, we want them to live forever. I have people say to me, oh, but he's only 90. You know, everyone in our family lives to be 100. And so 90's young. So, you know, I certainly understand that all of us want to live as long as possible and want the people that we love to be around as long as possible. But there is a point in time where prolonged survival isn't possible and the quality of life becomes really impacted. And so instead of thinking of death as medical failure, what we instead want to do is to think about the end of life as a sacred time, as a meaningful time. This should be a time to really step back and say, what is important to you? To do the things and say the things, experience the things that are really important to you. There's a wonderful nurse that participated in one of our projects, and she worked in a rural community, a farming community, and she said that one of the phrases that she often used with her patients was to say, do you have any fences left to mend? Which I thought was beautiful. And she said it was an open door, you know, that every farmer could identify that with that and say, well, yeah, I do have a few fences to mend. You know, I have this brother that I sort of haven't spoken to in some time, or my relationship with my children maybe hasn't been what I'd hoped for, or there's this, you know, work or something that I never quite got done. And so now's the time to mend the last fences. Now's the time to think about your legacy. How do you want to be remembered? Or now's the time to get your affairs in order financially so that your family can, you know, benefit from you having done that work for them.
Do you find that people who are in the situation also have to work that balance between, you know, it's not too early to have the conversation, but yet we're still fighting and hoping for some healing or resolution? So when you bring in that care earlier, you also have the opportunity for a recovery, do you not?
Absolutely. In fact, we completed a study last fall here at City of Hope Medical Center with just under 500 people with lung cancer. And it was a study comparing those who got good palliative care versus those who did not. And our study, as you would have expected, like many studies now in the literature, demonstrated that patients who got palliative care had better symptom management, better quality of life, you know, a lot of great outcomes. But what our study also showed is that the people that got palliative care lived longer. Hmm. And there's now a series of studies. Our study was just, you know, added one more to the mix, but now there are a series of major studies that have been published across the country that have reported the same thing consistently. People who get palliative care live longer. And that seems like a surprise, but it shouldn't be, because if you think about it, people who live longer are people, you know, people who are getting palliative care, their symptoms are being controlled. Mm-hmm. They're eating better, they're drinking better, they're getting up and moving around because their pain is controlled. Psychologically, they feel supported, so they're less anxious and less depressed. So, you know, you can actually say, well, of course, it makes perfect sense. It shouldn't be a surprise. It's the opposite. It makes perfect sense that people who get palliative care live longer, because giving you good palliative care lends to all of those things that help people live longer or want to live longer.
Is there a cultural precedence for this? Is there another country or a time in history where a group of people did this well that we're looking back on? Or are we kind of inventing this as we go in modern healthcare?
You know, many people would look back to like the early 1900s in this country, before we had ICUs and antibiotics and high-tech healthcare. And certainly none of us would want to go back to that time. You know, if I have an infection, I'm grateful that I can take an antibiotic and be cured in 5 days and not die of pneumonia at age 30. But at the same time, I think there definitely was a period in healthcare where there was much greater recognition that there really was nothing else that could be done. And so therefore, all of our attention was focused on the quality of your remaining life, comforting you, being present, versus doing more procedures.
You recently visited South Dakota. What were your impressions of how palliative care is working in our state?
I can't even begin to tell you how impressed I was with virtually everyone I met in the state of South Dakota. I think it starts with there are some tremendous leaders there. Dr. Mary Minton is a faculty member in the School of Nursing, and she was actually the person who had invited me to come, and I've had communication with her over the last several years, serving as a research mentor to her and a colleague sharing information in our field of palliative care. But it's very clear through her work and several of the other leaders there, there's outstanding palliative care education. I met with several of the doctoral students in the School of Nursing who were incredible, amazing, doing really cutting-edge work. I went to the hospital and met with the palliative care team. I participated in a lunch meeting where people came from both of the major hospitals as well as many community settings, and I was just blown away. I came back and told my colleagues, like, what impressive work is happening in South Dakota.
The rural nature of our state, is that a challenge, an opportunity, a barrier to this model of care?
You know, I think the challenge rests in a sort of a very practical issue, and that is in many rural communities, there are small hospitals, and it simply isn't possible if you have a, 50-bed or even 100-bed hospital, it's not possible to have a formalized palliative care team in every hospital.
Mm-hmm.
What is possible is then to have the rural hospitals have access to palliative care teams within the larger areas and to have telemedicine where there can be consultation with patients,
mm-hmm.
to have hospice programs within the rural communities, and to have good education of clinicians serving throughout the state so that they can incorporate within their general practice the principles of palliative care.
What does palliative care look like 15 years from now? Where are we going?
Where we're going is very interesting because, in fact, palliative care is, such good news that now the problem, we've gone from nobody's ever heard about it to now everyone's heard about it and everyone wants it. And so now we actually have a serious workforce shortage. So across the United States, there's now very important dialogue going on about this workforce shortage. And one of the key discussions that is being had is about the generalist versus specialist notion of palliative care. And what that discussion centers around is that now that we have such strong evidence that relieving pain, relieving symptoms, providing psychosocial support, having family conferences, goals of care conversations, all of these ideas are so good that they really need to be incorporated into general practice and not just reserved for the specialist.
Yeah.
And so what that means is that, every oncologist, everyone who treats cancer patients needs to be very good at palliative care. Every cardiologist needs to be very good at palliative care. Think in terms of where we are 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the most serious issue is the aging of our population. Our healthcare system is about to become just flooded, just overwhelmed with older people with chronic illnesses.
Do I want my oncologist to be thinking about palliative care, or do I want my oncologist to be doing everything she or he can to get me better and then have a separate doctor for palliative care? When you talk about combining those two roles, does that become a conflict?
Absolutely not. And if you are diagnosed tomorrow with cancer, I promise you that you want both. You want to know that your oncologist is as the state of the art of cancer care practice. They are at the cutting edge of how to best diagnose your cancer, treat your cancer, manage the symptoms of your treatment, and seek to provide you the longest survival and the best survival possible. You want that. But at the same time, you also want your oncologist to not only know which chemotherapy drugs to give you or which diagnostic tests, you want that oncologist to know how to manage your pain and how to control your dyspnea, your difficulty breathing, and how to speak with you and your family so that you understand what's happening. So the American public shouldn't feel that they have to choose, either I have, a physician who's very smart and knows the best drugs and treatment, or I have someone who's really good at symptom management and quality of life, the American public should expect that their healthcare providers can do both very well.
What intrigues you personally so much about this field of study that you would want to dedicate a career to it?
I have been in this field for my entire career, which is actually 39 years this year. I started working on an inpatient in a hospital oncology program, and within days, if not hours, of being in that cancer setting, I was drawn very much to those patients that were not expected to survive their cancer. And I think it was because I saw how absolutely devastated people could be from serious illnesses. And also at the same time, so the huge gaps in care, I saw that people were not getting good care, but I also knew that there was a lot that we should do, could do, when it comes to managing their pain, controlling their symptoms, supporting their family, providing spiritual care, that there was a better way. And so that's when I decided this is the work for me. I'm so fortunate to be a part of this movement. But at the end of the day, what I can say is that, if it were me and the people I love, I would want them to have palliative care. And I have, in fact, had, like all of us, the opportunity to see my mother and my father at the end of their lives. And I saw what happened when they got palliative care and when they received hospice care, that my parents, who I loved, were able to have the best care possible, the best oncologists, the best medicine doctors, but also the best palliative care.
Were you able to be with them and be part of that care, or did you have an awareness that that's what was happening as a daughter?
With my mother, I had to really juggle, running back and forth across the country as she faced lung cancer. And, I did that the best I could, but I also made sure that she was in hospice care in the final months of her life, so that when I couldn't be there, I knew that she was getting the best care possible. I was there when she died. She died in my arms while receiving hospice care in a rural community in Oklahoma. My father then moved out to California to live with me and was with me for 5 years. And then he also developed, was 89 years old when, he was a healthy farmer, someone who had spent most of his life avoiding the healthcare system, but in his final months of his life, like many 89-year-olds, began to have pulmonary problems and cardiac problems. And so he was living with me, and we got him the absolute best care possible. But when it came to the point in time where we had to make some difficult choices, he was hospitalized, and we had to make a choice. Do we continue to expose him to hospitals and IVs and lots of drugs and, a lot of treatments that were really impacting his quality of life and creating a lot of suffering, or was it time to go home? And so we went home, and I had hospice care for him in my home, and he died in my home. And so every son or daughter, granddaughter, niece, nephew, we all want for the people that are important to us, we want the best health care possible, but we also want to know at the end of life that quite often there is a time where the goal shifts. The goal is no longer, let my father live another month. The goal is, I want my father to be comfortable. I want him to spend his last days, at home in his bedroom with his dog at his bedside and bringing in flowers from the garden that he managed every day. I want, my father to have tranquil time to read his Bible and have a chaplain visit. I want him in his own clothes and his own rocking chair. That's what's important. And so that's what palliative care is about.
Dr. Betty Farrell was named one of 30 visionaries in the field by the American Academy of Hospice and Palliative Medicine. She's the author of 9 books and a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing. She visited Sioux Falls for a conversation about spirituality and ethics at the end of life. After the break, a glimpse into the mind of Laura Ingalls Wilder. A new book collects her letters and illuminates her private life. We'll sit down with the author when we come back. You're listening to Dakota Midday on member-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.